All right. Hey, everyone. It's good to see you all. You know, it's funny. I think there's a Gentle Healing 3 party somewhere, and we're the uninvited. Today I noticed far fewer people than ever before posted today. Far fewer. I only had to read like 6 or 7 posts today, which was good because I was busy, but it was far fewer. Usually there's closer to 25. And also, there's nobody here, hardly. I mean, some of us are here, but very few of us are here. So I think there's a party somewhere, and they didn't tell us. Yeah. Yeah, so we'll just have to turn this into a party. So we're here. First of all, I want to tell you all that I listened to last week's recording. Well, actually, it's not 100% true. I listened to part of last week's recording. I never got to return to it. But I was enjoying the sharings. One of the sharings that I listened to was Nancy's. And I think that one of the things we'll do tonight is listen to Nancy's sharing again, at least part of it, and kind of look at something that I heard in her sharing. But before we do that, I would like to know if any of you have something that you would like to share. Okay, Tony, please go ahead.
I just wanted to share that one of the things that I noticed while you were away is that the mind was so used to looking for a comment from Regina, and it wasn't happening anymore. And I felt a little, I think the ego was feeling this sense of disappointment and like, well, where am I? I mean, how am I doing? And, you know, just like I needed somebody else to affirm my progress. And it really helped me to see that maybe I need to be a little bit more willing to just let everything be the way it is and without affirmation. So yeah. I just wanted to hear that.
Yeah, and doing the work really for yourself, you know. I mean, that's, you know, doesn't matter what I or anyone else think. What really matters to me is whether you feel like your contemplation is carrying you somewhere or not. See, that's the thing about my contemplation. I literally feel carried by my contemplation. I feel like it's carrying me somewhere. And that's what matters more than anything. But of course, I love being helpful and, you know, encouraging you all to continue because I value the contemplation process. But the real importance is, are you getting anything out of your contemplation? So, Tony, I think you are based on what I'm seeing. So, overall, good job, even if I never say anything again. Lynn, I see you have a question. You want to go ahead?
Okay, am I unmuted?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. My question is on your posting today, which I found very helpful, but I would like to know if you could go deeper. You were talking about the guidance of the script and the guidance of the awakened one. Could
yeah.
you clarify a little bit?
Yeah, and was this my post to you? Is that who I posted this to?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I do remember writing it. I just couldn't remember for sure if it was you or someone else. Yeah, when I was... up until Inner Ramana, I thought that all guidance came from what we would call the Holy Spirit. But when I got to the teachings of Inner Ramana, it refined that. Now, first of all, the teachings of Inner Ramana didn't use the term Holy Spirit at all. It used the term awakened one. But the awakened one would be the same as the Holy Spirit of A Course in Miracles. It just means the awakened mind or the awakened part of consciousness, right? And we could say that, you know, Jesus and Buddha and Ramana and Nisargadatta and all of them are kind of lumped into that one, that awakened one, right? So what Inner Ramana told me was that the awakened one only provides guidance to help you awaken. And that the script itself provides guidance about the script. And again, if we remember the code had different levels of vibration, you know, within the script. There were the lower levels of vibration, which, you know, the Hindus would call tamasic. And there are the higher levels of vibration, which the Hindus would call sattvic. And the truth is, although, you know, maybe some people don't like hearing this, the truth is the script is always guiding you. Even if you're guided at the lowest vibration, even if you're guided, kill him, and you do, you were actually guided to do that by the script, not by the Holy Spirit, not by the awakened one. The truth is, none of us have a thought of our own. Every thought that comes into your mind is guidance from the script, or it could be guidance from the awakened one that's helping you to awaken. But you are always, always, always guided. You know, there's just, you know, we think we have our own ideas, but that's just not true. So the script guides us. Even if I start swearing at you, you know, that's guidance of the script. However, because of our own inherent inner wisdom, we have the ability to pause and wait for the highest script guidance that the script can give. And that's really the recommendation that the awakened one would ask. The awakened one would not specifically give you a guidance, but it would ask that you follow the highest guidance of the script. So for example, if I was, you know, feeling this feeling to swear at you right now, but I paused and I looked, and maybe another thought comes into the mind that says something like, take a deep breath and, you know, ask her what she means by that. That's still script, but that's a higher vibration of script. So the awakened one isn't really giving me the guidance to take a breath and ask you what you want. The script is giving me that guidance. But the awakened one is the one that gives me the guidance to follow the highest vibration. Does that make sense? The awakened one itself does not get involved in the script at all.
Yes, and you made it much more clear. And I think that's why sometimes I question if I'm really hearing guidance or if I'm just hearing what I want to hear. So realizing how that script works, and like Jay was saying, that's a killer script. Yeah. So that, yeah, that does clarify more. Thank you.
Yeah, so just concentrate on reaching for the highest vibration. Yeah. The highest vibration of the script. Now, as I mentioned in your post, the guidance that you received when you asked that question, that guidance had nothing to do with the script, right? That was the awakened one speaking. You know.
And I was really happy that you clarified that for me. Just, yeah. You know, just so that I know it's not just me saying what I want to hear.
Right, right. Well, in a way, it is what you want to hear, which is good, because you want to hear the awakened one.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was good. And the problem with guidance, if any of us are sincere and honest about it, the problem with guidance is that actually it is coming from ourself. It's just coming from another level of ourself. And so because it is coming from ourself, and because at some level of honesty, we know it's coming from ourself, the ego can then take that knowledge and distort it and say, oh, that's just coming from you. The truth is, the awakened one is a part of your soul. You know, so it is coming from you, but it's not coming from your ego mind. So that's a distortion that the ego throws out there to try and get you to quit. Oh, it's just coming from you. And the reason you're tempted to believe it is because at some level, you know, it's coming from you. But that's just the way it all is. And the more you awaken, the more you see that's fine. It is coming from you. It's coming from your awakened soul. It's guiding you perfectly. And that's just the way it should be. So to heck with you, ego. Jay says, what I find is a greater difficulty in listening to the higher script amidst strong emotion. Yeah. I had a rule when I was going through my purification period. And it's up to you if you want to follow rules or not. Some people don't like rules. I've always thought that rules are there to serve our highest good. So I had a rule. I never spoke or acted while feeling high emotion. That was my rule. Never. Not with Laurent, not with Jasmine, not with anyone. I waited until I had clarity. You know, with Jasmine, I would tell Jasmine that I needed to put myself on a timeout right now, because that was the language of her at that age. And I would go in my bedroom and I would close the door, and then I would do whatever I needed to do. It might start with rest, accept, and trust before I could even journal, right? But I would rest, accept, and trust. I would pray. I would journal. I would read the course if that's what I was guided to do, because I was a course student during that time. But I did not interact with people when I was in my wrong mind. That was my rule, and I followed my own rules. Jay says, sounds like you are expressing a basic sense of responsibility regarding the effects your strong emotions may have on others and on myself. I was sharing this with a friend today, but let me share with you one of the quotes that I recently contemplated. This is quote 1002. If you have the seven steps there, if you're like me, you might want to grab it and look, because I know it will sink in deeper if I both hear it and see it, right? Rather than if I'm just listening. So quote 1002. It says, the tendencies brought forward from past incarnations are of two kinds, pure and impure. And so he's talking about latent tendencies. And he's saying you really have two kinds of latent tendencies. You have pure tendencies and you have impure tendencies. He says the pure ones lead you towards liberation, and the impure ones invite trouble. And although I just read this quote for the first time yesterday, intuitively I knew that the impure ones invite trouble. I knew that if I get involved with people from a high emotional state, the outcome of that would never be good. So I chose not to get involved with people from a high emotional state. Yeah. All right. Let me go ahead and share my screen, and we'll listen to a little bit of Nancy. Well, you know what? I'm not going to do that now. I changed my mind. I'll just review the part of her sharing that I wanted to review. I won't be able to do it in her words, which is why I think I wanted to play it. But in order to get to it, I don't think I can even give you her words at all. I think what I can give you is what my insight was that I wanted to share that came while I was listening to her. I think that's the best I can do. I wish I could remember her words, but I can't. But here's what I wanted to share about her words. I believe, if I remember correctly, that she talked about an insight she had, that she only knew the body through the senses. She could see the body. Of course, we can feel the body. If we haven't had a shower lately, we can smell the body. you know, sometimes you can taste the body, like if you cry and a tear gets into your mouth, you can taste the saltiness. Obviously, I can hear the body, right? So she commented on the fact that she realized that she only knew the body through the senses. And that's really the starting point of my sharing. What I want to share is, if you had no senses at all, you're going to have to use your imagination a little bit, but I think you can do this. Imagine for a moment that you cannot see. And even though you're going to be listening to me, imagine for a moment that you cannot hear. Imagine you have no sense of smell. Imagine you have no sense of taste. And you have no sense of touch, no senses at all. Can you still know that you're aware? Can you still know that you are? And you can open your eyes. What I wanted to add to her insight is it's absolutely true. You need to see, hear, smell, taste, or touch. Maybe you don't need all of them. You could be like Helen Keller. I think Jay mentioned Helen Keller recently. You know, you could be blind and deaf, but Helen Keller still had taste and smell and touch, right? She was only blind and deaf, right? You need to have at least one of your senses, if not more than one, to realize that there's a body. But you do not need any of your senses to realize that you are. So which one is paramount or king or real or fact? The body is only reported through the senses. Awareness requires no senses for you to be aware of it. And I want to thank Nancy for bringing me to, reminding me to share that point through her insight. Does anybody have anything to share?
I did have an experience when we were walking yesterday of no self, in the sense that I felt that as we were hiking, there was a period of time where I felt I was stationary and that this, the scenery is moving by me, and I felt like a stillness here. I still felt like I was in a body, but there was a little bit of a removal of that, which was kind of cool.
Thank you. I just wanted to share. Yeah, we were walking very slowly yesterday. We went on a 7-mile hike, and we walked very, very slow. And so it was, if we wanted it to be, I mean, we weren't on a retreat yesterday. It was just Memorial Day. We were just hanging out socially. But I know that I was contemplating, and sounds like Jay was probably contemplating. I'm not sure what Shauna was doing. I wasn't speaking to her. I know she was taking care of Cheryl a lot, so she may not have had as much opportunity to contemplate. But, you know, walking very slowly gives you lots of opportunity to contemplate. Walking very fast, it's not as easy for me. I don't know about you guys, but it's not as easy. Although today I did take a fast contemplative walk, but I was on a flat road, without traffic, where on a hike, you know, there's all kinds of rocks sticking out and stuff. You need to be paying some attention. So to try and contemplate and walk fast and not fall and kill yourself might be a little too much. So a little slower, but it was a nice slow hike yesterday. Death by contemplation. In fact, today I found when I was contemplating, I actually even started running sometimes. But again, I was on a flat road with no traffic, and I didn't have to be thinking about where my feet were going. So I can contemplate and walk fast as long as I don't have to be also watching for the safety of the body. All right, then let me jump in and see what I collected this week. I did, as Tony pointed out, take a week off from reading you guys' contemplations when I knew Shauna was leading the class. It takes me about an hour and a half a day, so I just chose to not do it. At first I thought I would, and then I thought, nah, I'm going to take a break. And I did. I took a break. But I started reading them again last Wednesday, even though I was still officially on vacation, because I knew that I would be sharing tonight. So I have read all of them since last Wednesday. And actually, I want to start by looking at Susan's journal. So let's go to Awakening Together. Apologize for not having this set up beforehand. I wasn't even thinking about it. That's what happens when I'm gone. Even 1 week, I get out of practice. It didn't take long for me to forget things. By the way, have you guys noticed you've made 5,468 posts already this year? Okay, here's Susan. Let me peek and see what I wanted to read from hers. Looks like I wanted to read 329, 330, and 332. Okay, so right here, 329 and 330, and then I'll read 332. So she contemplated 329 and 330 together. Even as an unreal nightmare produces real results, this world seems to give rise to a sense of reality in a state of ignorance. When true wisdom arises, this unreality vanishes. Changes in the unchanging are imagined by ignorant and deluded people. Those are the quotes. Here's what she wrote. Underneath each action is a thought about the action, derived from a dream of the ego's confused needs for change, results, and solutions. There is no validity inside the dreamer's imagination or outside either. The dreamer grasps and clings for ideas to make the unreal appear to exist, which only extenuates illusion. The real has no need to be perfected. It simply is. In a state of ignorance, I misperceive all concepts of what I am and what I see. Observed in light, there is no what to see. So I think the main reason I wanted to share this, it was this sentence right here. The dreamer grasps and clings for ideas to make the unreal appear to exist, which only extenuates the illusion. And I think it's really important. I think this sentence is an extremely important sentence. It's really important for us to realize that when our attention is listening to our mind's mental chatter, listening to our thoughts, it is grasping and clinging for ideas. I'm going to temporarily put a period there, period. It doesn't care what those ideas are. It is grasping and clinging for ideas. So in one moment, and I'm sure I know you guys have all experienced this, in one moment you can be thinking, oh, I really want this, I really like this, I'd really like to have this, how can I get this? And in the next moment you can be thinking, oh my gosh, but if I get that, then this problem's going to happen, and I'll have to work on this. And the next moment you're back to, but I got to have this. And it's kind of like the ego is arguing both sides of whatever the current thought is. And that's because the ego doesn't really care what you listen to. It only cares that you listen, right? So the dreamer grasps and clings for ideas period. But now I'm going to add to that. The dreamer grasps and clings for ideas. Why? Here's the answer. Because it wants to make the unreal appear to exist. It wants to extenuate the illusion. So I just thought that was a wonderful sentence, and I wanted to share that sentence. And then I also wanted to go down and look at 332. Liberation is the realization of the total non-existence of the universe as such. This is different from a mere denial of the existence of the ego and the universe. The latter is only half knowledge. Okay, Susan wrote, if I'm to understand non-existence with total clarity, then I also accept that all of life is discovered through my freedom from identification with thought, but never in denial of those thoughts, as thoughts and emotions can be quite dangerous to the individual and collective if they are not seen, understood, and transformed. When I deny, the tendency is to ignore. When I ignore, I suppress. When I suppress a thought, denying it from being seen in awareness. It will eventually manifest in floods of thought, which ignite unwholesome actions, which trigger into further worldly illusions of an ignorant state of mind. So when I am aware of the dream and allow it to rise, and through mindful discernment remain unattached and unaffected by it, then I am not deluded by pervading false thoughts or judgments about the dream. I learn to let go of thought, ideas, and desires, and watch while they fade over and over, opening to my true nature. Turning inward, self's sole intent is to nurture the seeds of openness and curiosity, remaining with what is present. So what I loved about this, I thought that this really clarified that we want to learn to ignore thought, but we ignore thought by acknowledging it for what it is first. We don't deny thought. So for example, an example of denial is when you're peeved with someone and they say, you know, why are you upset with me? And you say, I'm not upset. You're lying to yourself. That's a denial of thought. And when you deny a thought, you repress a thought. And as Susan points out here, repressed thoughts and emotions can be quite dangerous to the individual and the collective. You know, that repressed energy is actually energy that you are keeping and believing and also sending out into the universe. So let's say you're peeved at someone, right? And, and hopefully you notice it first, but I'll just use the same scenario. I'll say they notice it first. They say, why are you upset at me? That's a sign to look. Oh, I do see a thought of upset. I acknowledge that thought of upset. I don't want that thought of upset. Let me look at this again. Right? That's the difference. I remember even when Jasmine was young, I used to always say to Jasmine, forgive me, I was in my ego just then. Let me take that back and do this again. Usually people did not point out to me that I was upset. Usually I caught it first. And what I would do then, and I would catch it before I even acted on it. And what I would do then is I would see the thought show up, you know, like he's a jerk or she's a jerk. I'd see the thought show up and I would say to myself in my own mind, nobody else ever saw this, I see that thought. I would literally say, I see that thought. And then I would realize I don't want that thought. I would choose. And I used to tell people it's not any different than choosing from a menu. You know, there's a restaurant in Pueblo West called Rojas. They've removed it from the menu, but they used to have chicken gizzard soup on the menu. And I could look right at that chicken gizzard soup and know I didn't want it. And you can do that with thoughts too. You can look right at a thought, see it for what it is, and realize I don't want this. And when you do that, when you acknowledge a thought and then let it go, you're not repressing it, right? You are letting it go and it doesn't affect you or the collective. But when you lie to yourself and you repress a thought, it affects you and the collective. So I wanted to share that. Now, I can't see you guys right now because I'm looking at my screen. Is there anyone who has anything they'd like to share or ask based on what I've just read from Susan's journal? If so, just speak up.
Regina, I'd like to add something. Yes. This is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
I've got to attribute a lot of that to the work I was doing with Jay in the Buddhism course, because in the curriculum, it was asking us to look at a lot of habit energies. And I had, it's this time of year for graduations, and I had to face a lot of family, extended family this weekend. And it was a lot of anxiety leading up to that. So I felt like I was in full throttle the week before, thanks to, you know, really concentrating on trying to inquire about my thoughts and what I was thinking about the thoughts and what I was going to, you know, affirm in those experiences. So that really did lead me into a lot of inquiry last week, and it helped me a lot to just focus on what I was going to anticipate and thought and how I was going to handle it differently than I've handled it in the past,
like yes.
the last 50 years. How can I do this differently with where I am now as opposed to where I was, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago? So I just wanted to add that as kind of an incentive that really helped me a lot this week.
Thank you. And, you know, one of the things that, of course, Thich Nhat Hanh, for those of you who don't know, writes the textbook that we use for our Buddhist class. And Thich Nhat Hanh, the way he really addresses this, and I'm sure you'll remember reading it, is he would always say, smile at the thought. And really, when he's saying smile at the thought, he's saying acknowledge it, you know. Yes, that thought is there. No, I don't want it. And in fact, when Holy Spirit was teaching me this, because I had a hard time with this, you know, I don't know if you guys have as hard a time as I do, but there was some belief in me that now I see as ridiculous, but I didn't then. There was a belief in me that if the thought showed up in my mind, I had to believe it, like I was obligated. And somehow if I didn't believe it, I was lying, you know. So if the thought shows up, he's a jerk. That's how I feel, you know, like that's the fact. And for me to pretend like I don't feel that way would be a lie. And so I had a lot of trouble letting go of thoughts because of that belief that if it shows up in my mind, that is my thought. I do believe it, and it'd be a lie to let it go. So what Holy Spirit did for me in my journaling process was compare thoughts to shopping at TJ Maxx. And you guys may not shop at TJ Maxx, and who knows, maybe some of you girls don't, but most girls are familiar with TJ Maxx. And the difference between TJ Maxx and a typical department store like a Dillard's or a Macy's is if you go into a Dillard's or a Macy's, you know, they'll have a bunch of blouses that look alike, but they have them in all sizes. So you just go through all these blouses that look alike and you're looking for your size. At TJ Maxx, they don't have a bunch of blouses that look alike. They have the sizes and a bunch of different blouses. So you walk over to your size, and you're looking at a whole bunch of blouses that don't look alike. And so what Holy Spirit said to me is looking at thoughts is like looking at blouses at TJ Maxx. You know, you have all of these thoughts. They're like different blouses at TJ Maxx. And it said when you're at TJ Maxx and you see a blouse you don't like, you don't have a problem with that. You just say, nope, I don't want that one. Nope, I don't want that one. And then finally you come to one you like. You go, oh, yeah, I think I'll try this one, right? And so that's really all I need to do with my thoughts. You know, the thought comes in, he's a jerk. Okay, I see that thought, but I don't want to think that, right? He stole your money. I see that thought, but I don't think I want to give my attention to that. You know, he's just taking advantage of you. Okay, I even feel that thought now. You know, I just don't want to give any more energy to this, but I think I'll rest, accept, and trust with these feelings for a moment. I'm going to let them pass. I realize I must have some belief here. I realize I must be feeling taken advantage of. I want truth more than this. I'm just going to rest with this. I'm going to let it pass. I don't want to give any more energy to that. You know, and this is how I was taught to be with my thoughts. And eventually what happens when you choose from your thoughts with discernment rather than just believing whatever shows up in your mind, eventually your mind becomes so clear. And by clear, I mean is you don't have all of these ridiculous, silly thoughts anymore. You know, you see people with clarity. You don't see them through judgments and through story. And, you know, and even if somebody does steal from you, you know, what you see is that they thought they needed that. They thought they needed that. They stole. And, you know, I don't know how to explain how you can see that without any judgment or without any icky feelings at all. I can just tell you that it's true. You know, I used to have a thief that lived with me, Debbie, and Debbie never did steal from me, but she was a thief. And she was afraid she would steal from me. And she said to me one day that she was afraid that she would steal from me. And I told her if she did, she did. You know, that was fine. And that I would love her no matter what. And of course, she never stole from me. But, you know, you get to that clear seeing, that clear thinking by looking at each thought and choosing the ones you want and the ones you don't want. And of course, you don't want them. Because you want truth more, right? Anybody else want to share on that topic?
Yeah, I was going to say that when I was listening to you, I mean, first of all, from a typical human perspective, for a person to say, if you steal from me, you steal from me, and that's okay, is probably about 3 in a billion, maybe. So, that aside, it's the whatever thing we're attached to, whatever condition or thing we're going to find defense in that we have to have in our environment. That's where we're vulnerable to reacting, because that's where our attachments are. And one came up for me today to look at about emotions in a certain emotional environment that I want. And when that's violated or, you know, taken away, that's where I can get upset. I am not my emotions is what comes to mind. You know, like, you know, if you're okay with things being stolen from you, you must think, well, I am not my things. You know, these things, you've let your attachment go, in other words. So this exposed to me an attachment to some emotional state that I have, right? And that as self, as awareness, everything moves, all emotions move within that. And they aren't good or bad, or desirable or undesirable. And so that was just an insight I had from listening to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you can become very clear, and you can become one of the one or the 3 in 7 billion who say, if you steal from me, you steal from me, and that's fine. Because the truth is, there's no problem with people stealing from you other than your thoughts about that. I mean, you know, there's just not a problem with that. What are you really out except for stuff? It just doesn't matter. And you can have that clarity very, very easily. But it is a matter of sorting through thoughts. In my case, it was a few years. And deciding which thoughts are worth giving my attention to and which thoughts aren't. And doing that very seriously and for one reason. Again, the one reason is I want truth. I want awakening. I want clarity. And therefore, I don't want anything that isn't that. You know, another really important realization is that desire cannot be mixed and be effective. You know, so you can't want awakening and stuff too, for example, since we're talking about stealing. Or you can't want awakening and peace too, because you talked about an emotional environment. You can't want awakening and peace too. I know that sounds crazy, but awakening is at peace in any environment. It's not wanting a peaceful environment. In fact, I'm reading Bernadette Roberts' autobiography, and of course, I'm going to have to give her credit as a spiritual prodigy. She had realizations at three, at age three, that many people don't have in a lifetime. But it was age 9 or 10 when she realized that she wanted to be happy no matter what, in any environment, no matter who was around her, no matter how they were behaving. And believe me, her parents didn't always behave well. And of course, and to a child, parents are a pretty strong part of your environment. She just wanted to be happy no matter what. That became her goal. So there's a big difference between trying to arrange the world around me so I can be happy and at peace, and choosing to be happy and at peace regardless of what the world is like around me. And so watching your desires very carefully, making sure your desire is pure, that comes first. And then, once your desire is pure, with that desire in mind, knowing what you want, then you sort through your thoughts, and you'll make wise choices. But if your desire is mixed, even if you're sorting through your thoughts, you're probably going to be sometimes choosing based on a different desire. You're like, I don't want to be stolen from, so I choose this thought. Or I want a peaceful environment, so I choose this thought. And because you're choosing based on the wrong desire, you're still making choices with the ego. Anything else before I move on? All right, looks like the next person I wanted to look at was Mark, number 333. So let's get out of Susan. Let's go find Mark. Here he is. I like it when people are on page one. That's easy. Last week, 333. Okay, so in dream, the dream body appears to be real. But when there is awakening to the fact of the dream, the reality of that body vanishes. Even so, the physical body, which is sustained by memory and latent tendencies, is seen to be unreal when they are seen to be, when they, the latent tendencies, are seen to be unreal, or memory and latent tendencies. All right, so this is what his inner wisdom wrote about that quote. Your physical body is sustained by memory and latent tendencies. What are these latent tendencies? They are the, quote, realities that were habituated into you during the formation of your ego, during your infant and childhood years, when you learned how the world of illusion worked. Having observed your grandchildren over the same time period, think about how vulnerable young children are to what they are taught. Vulnerable in the sense that they don't know enough to push back on anything. They have to learn in order to survive in this dream world. Now recognize that you can take ownership of decisions and acceptances that you made during your vulnerable years. Take these decisions back. Undo these latent tendencies and memories. You have the power to do so. Choose instead to merge into the Christ mind that's always been who you are. Choose to reflect the Christ mind's love into the illusory world and allow it to vanish. Brent Haskell, when he was our speaker at a retreat, a winter retreat we had in February for an MPP ordination ceremony, there was something he said at that retreat that I never forgot. He said that when your children are especially age 5 and under, and you say something to them, you speak to them, you are like the voice of God. It never, ever occurs to a young child that their parents are wrong. So, you know, if you walk into your child at age 4 or age 5 and say, get your lazy ass out of bed, it never occurs to them that you're wrong. They're a lazy ass. God just spoke it. And that's something to think about as parents, although most of us are past the age of having young children. But what the guidance is pointing out here is a lot of our beliefs, a lot of our latent tendencies, a lot of our conditioning came from that period of time, and it probably even goes beyond 5 somewhat, but you know, from that period of time when it never occurred to us yet that our parents or our caretakers could be wrong. So what do we do with that? We have to realize, and you know, like this I am bad belief, for example, that everybody has so much trouble letting go of. We have to realize that we learned that I am bad belief way back when we were 2 and 3 and 4 years old, because we didn't know enough to notice that we were innocent. We just believed what we were told. And we're carrying it around as if God spoke it. And God didn't speak it. A hurt woman who or man who was confused because they learned the same kinds of things from their parents spoke it. You know, it came from confusion. It came from the ego mind. It came from ignorance. And it was never, ever, ever, ever true. But we were in that vulnerable state where we just believed whatever was spoken to us. And I love how his guidance says, again, vulnerable in the sense that you didn't know enough to push back on anything or to question anything. And so you learned it But now, he says, now recognize that you can take ownership of decisions and acceptances. That's an amazing statement. Even though you were vulnerable then and you didn't know that you could push back, now you can. Now you can. You're old enough now to go, wait a minute. I was taught that I was a lazy ass, but is that true? I believed I was a lazy ass. I acted like a lazy ass, you know, but is that true? I mean, you could actually take that responsibility now and you can question thoughts to that degree, to that depth. I'll tell you, I mentioned also that I'm reading Bernadette Roberts' book, and I told you that she was kind of like a spiritual prodigy. She pushed back on her parents all the time. She never, even from age 2 and 3, never believed this stuff. She couldn't believe that her mom thought she was bad. She just couldn't believe it. You know, to her, her mom was just confused. I'm not bad. You know, I mean, she's, you know, no matter what she did, and she was so funny. So she was kind of born from a point of consciousness, from a place in consciousness that had already formed beyond the I am bad belief. And she never had it, therefore she never bought into it, and she just did, she knew her parents were wrong. But the rest of us believed our parents. But we're the ones who did the believing, and it's time for us to take that responsibility and start seeing that these core ideas about ourselves, I am bad, even I am a person, is wrong. Who was it I was listening to the other day? I don't remember who I was listening to, but he was talking about, or she, could have been a she, was talking about how you know, when a baby is born, a baby doesn't know that it's a body. It has no idea. It only knows itself as awareness. But the parents actually teach it, oh, look, that's your hand. Oh, look in the mirror. That's your nose. Those are your eyes. Oh, look, that's you. And again, They're God. So if they say, this is my hand, this is my nose, this is my eye, that must be true. So that's why these beliefs are so deep. But we can take responsibility and we can undo them now. So I wanted to thank Mark for allowing that guidance to come through. Does anybody have anything they want to share on that before I move on? Okay, let's go to Andy. Yay, all three of them are on the first page. That made it easy tonight. I got lucky. Andy, 333. All right, let's see what else I wanted to look at with him. I said 333, 335, and 336. So again, this is the same quote, 333, in dream, the dream body appears to be real. But when there is an awakening to the fact of dream, the reality of that body vanishes. Even so, the physical body, which is sustained by memory and latent tendencies, is seen to be unreal when they are seen to be unreal. And you can hear, by the way, in this last part of this where Mark's wisdom came from, right? The body is just memory and latent tendencies, and the body can be seen as unreal when these memory and latent tendencies are also seen to be unreal, which is why you got to go back and question what you were taught as a child about who and what you are. But let's see what Andy's inner wisdom says. The dream body and one's belief in a self as that dream body in the world is upheld and supported by a concept called time and memories referenced in time. While we sometimes think of the mind as a container for memories and thoughts, it really only holds whatever the current thought or image is, which seems to be fed from outside itself, like changing movie images on a screen. Only one image is seen at a time, with the images strung together over time in an apparent linear sequence to create a movie. In the same way, the mind strings together memories over time to create the false idea of a character. So again, I still can't see you guys, just to let you know, but I don't know if you've ever seen the movie 50 First Dates. It's a funny little movie about a woman who has a car accident, and she loses all short-term memory, all memory, I think, after the date of the accident. So from the time she has the accident, she has no memory. She can remember before the accident. And what ends up happening is she meets this guy, they fall in love, they get married, they have children. But every single day when she wakes up, she doesn't remember any of that. She remembers all the way back to when she was young and had this accident. And she wakes up, she doesn't know anything. She doesn't know that she's married. She doesn't recognize the man. She doesn't know her children. And every single day, they start the day by showing her a video of her life to remind her who she is and that she has a husband and kids. And yeah, it's really kind of freaky. But the point is, without the memories, she doesn't know who she is. That's the point. The point is, without the memories, she is just presence. Now, in the movie, of course, they thought she was the person, and so they taught her who she was every day. But what we need to look at, what we need to question, is this string of memories who I am? Or what am I really, just that presence that in that movie woke up every day? Right? Am I just that presence? And that, you know, it's a, you know, people take it as a fact. Yes, I'm the 5-year-old that this happened to, and the 10-year-old that this happened to, and the 20-year-old. But what if you couldn't remember any of that? What if your head was knocked and all those memories were completely gone forever? Who are you? And I'll just leave you with that as a contemplation. You know, just like a while ago, I contemplated, imagine you have no senses, right? Imagine you have no memories at all. Who are you? Okay, and then 335 and 336, and I guess this will be it for tonight. 335 says, it is the nature of appearance to appear to be real, even though it is unreal. Andy writes, this whole illusion seems so dang real. That is because it is built with feedback loops to continuously turn your creative attention back around into it again, re-energizing it. The game gives you 5 physical sensory mechanisms that only work within the realm of the game and whose sole purpose is to make the game seem so real. Besides the senses, the game also offers you the efficient tool of believing attention, which only reinforces the game when it is placed on or fed into the game. So I think this is just something else that I think is worth contemplating. And I'll even throw the word if in here. Let's just imagine if this is true, that the senses are created to show you the game. You know, imagine, remember we played that game earlier today where I said, imagine you can't see, you can't hear, you can't feel, you can't smell, you can't touch. If you take away all the senses, you lose the whole entire world. You don't only lose the body, you lose the whole entire world. If you have 0 senses, there is 0 world. But you still have awareness. The senses are necessary to experience the world. So what if the senses really are like a virtual reality, you know, a virtual reality helmet? Only it's a body helmet in this case. What if the only purpose of the senses is to experience the unreal? We cannot experience the body without the senses. We cannot experience the world without the senses. We know that to be true. And yet we don't need the senses to experience awareness. What if the senses are just the virtual reality helmet? And then 336. In the mind of the deluded, the unreal manifests itself. And when the delusion has been dispelled, there is no longer an ignorant fantasy. The fanciful conviction that the unreal is real is deep rooted by repeated imagination. And then Andy writes, repeated imagination. Repetition is a powerful tool to reinforce belief. As long as you continue to believe in what your eyes, ears, etc. tell you, the deeper into the game you fall. So if we accept that our senses are nothing but a virtual reality helmet, that literally means that everything we experience with our senses is unreal and is the game. And I love these words. As long as you continue to believe in what your eyes, ears, etc. tell you, the deeper into the game you fall, the deeper into the game you fall. And think about that, the senses, virtual reality helmet. If it requires the senses to know it, it's virtual reality. And if we believe it is reality, we're just going deeper into the game. And then again, think about, contemplate, what is the one thing that I don't need senses to know? What is the one thing that I'm absolutely sure is present, is true, is not virtual reality? And with that, I end tonight. I'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.